every time you look at a traditional candlestick chart, you're basically being lied to. I mean, open, high, low, close. Those four numbers are just a complete illusion.
Yeah, they really are. It's just a massive abstraction of reality.
Right. They give you the final score of the session, but they actively hide, you know, the actual blood on the field. For anyone who's actually trading futures, staring at that hollow shell is, well, it's worse than useless.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because it completely obscures the actual algorithmic battle that's taking place inside the candle.
It's like looking at the final score of a football game and trying to deduce the entire offensive strategy without ever actually watching the game film. Like, you don't see the formations, the blocks, the tackles. You just see a number.
Yeah. A standard OHLC candle strips away the entire microstructure of the market. You're just seeing the boundaries of price movement over a completely arbitrary time interval.
Right, which is where the footprint chart comes in.
Exactly. When you introduce the footprint, you are ripping open that single candle and unpacking it into its individual price levels. You are mapping the executed irreversible aggression.
So you're looking at the actual trades that went through.
Right. Specifically, you're looking at the aggressive buyers, the market orders lifting the ask and placing them directly against the aggressive sellers, the market orders hitting the bid at every single tick.
The footprint is basically the most information-dense order flow tool available, right? Because it forces you to look at those mechanics.
It really is. It shows you exactly who fought, where the battle took place, and exactly how much capital they deployed to push the market.
But, and this is the big catch, because of that extreme density, the barrier to entry is just brutal.
Oh, absolutely.
If you pull up a footprint on a volatile NQ or ES session without a rigid framework, you're just staring at a matrix of flashing numbers, it is incredibly easy to drown in the data.
Yeah, you'll just get paralyzed.
So the mission today is filtering out that overwhelming noise to isolate the specific mechanical patterns that actually dictate the market auction. But to do that, you have to completely unlearn how your brain naturally processes numbers on a screen.
That is the crucial first hurdle, for sure. Because human instinct, it dictates that we read left to right, right? Straight across the line.
Yeah, exactly like reading a book.
Right. So when developing traders first boot up a footprint, they look at a specific price level and compare the volume on the left side of the column to the volume on the right side at that exact same price.
Which makes sense intuitively, right? You assume you're watching the buyers and sellers fight at that tick.
You do. But that fundamentally misunderstands how the exchange matching engine actually works. The market does not auction horizontally. It auctions diagonally.
Diagonally.
Yes. You must compare the aggressive buys at price level P against the aggressive sells at price P minus one tick.
Let's break down the actual physics of why that is. Because if I pull up an order book, the best ask, where the resting limit sell orders live, is always going to be at least one tick higher than the best bid, where the resting limit buy orders live.
Right. The spread.
Exactly. So if I send a market buy order, I am crossing the spread to consume liquidity at the ask. And if I send a market sell order, I'm crossing the spread to consume liquidity at the bid.
Which means the forces actively colliding with each other, the participants dictating the immediate direction of the market, are offset by that one tick.
Okay, that makes perfect sense.
So if you want to measure the true directional conviction at a specific moment in time, you have to look diagonally. You're measuring the aggressive buyers who are willing to pay up and lift the offer and comparing them directly against the aggressive sellers who are actively hitting the bid.
And that structural reality brings us to the core concept of an imbalance, doesn't it?
Exactly. When we read that diagonal, we are looking for a pronounced, overwhelming dominance of one aggressive side over the other.
And there's an industry standard for this, right? The 300% threshold.
Yeah, the 300% rule, meaning the volume on one side of that diagonal relationship is at least three times larger than the other.
So just to visualize it, if you have 300 aggressive market buy contracts lifting the offer and only 50 market sell contracts hitting the bid on the opposite side of that diagonal.
That's a massive 6-to-1 ratio. And that triggers a buy imbalance. It is the visual representation of aggressive one-sided participation.
But there is a massive trap here that constantly destroys retail traders, and it really comes down to absolute volume.
Oh, the volume trap is lethal. Looking at percentages without an absolute volume filter is just a guaranteed way to bleed out your account.
Right, because a 6-to-2 ratio on a diagonal is technically a 300% imbalance.
Exactly. But two contracts or six contracts in an ES or NQ order book during the cache session. That is pure, meaningless background noise.
It's mathematical static. I mean, the percentages look huge, but the actual capital deployed is virtually zero.
Yeah, you see this all the time with default software settings. If your platform is flagging every single 3-to-1 ratio during a quiet, low-volume lunchtime rotation,
your chart is going to be completely littered with false signals.
You will be paralyzed by imbalances that carry absolutely no institutional weight whatsoever.
So how do you fix that?
To fix that, an imbalance must be gated behind a minimum volume threshold. And that threshold has to be explicitly scaled to that specific market's normal rotation.
Because the ES trades incredibly thick compared to the NQ, right?
Right. And crude oil, CL, trades with a completely different rhythm than both of them. You have to ensure that the absolute volume creating that 300% ratio is actually large enough to represent real institutional urgency.
And once you finally filter for that real size, you stop looking at single anomalies and you start looking for stacked imbalances.
Yes. Stacked imbalances are where the real edge is. This is when three or more consecutive price levels print an imbalance on the same side.
A stacked imbalance is basically the literal footprint of an algorithmic sweep, isn't it?
That's exactly what it is. When a massive participant, say, an institution that needs to execute heavy size, immediately enters the market, they just don't have the luxury of sitting passively on the bid.
Right. Their execution algorithms are designed to sweep through multiple price levels on the book, indiscriminately consuming all the resting liquidity in their path.
And what that sweep leaves behind is a massive liquidity vacuum. It reveals a zone of extreme directional conviction.
Because heavy capital was deployed to push price through those levels.
Precisely. And those large participants have a vested interest in defending their average execution price. So if you see a stacked buy imbalance drive the market up, that specific multi-tick price zone mechanically transitions into a critical area of future support on any subsequent retest.
Let's apply that to a breakout scenario, because this is where the mechanism gets really interesting. Say the market is compressing right against a heavy point of control, a POC, from the prior day.
Okay, a classic setup.
Suddenly, price breaks out, and the footprint shows a stacked imbalance shooting straight through that high-volume node. But here is the key. As it breaks through, there is absolutely zero participation from the opposite side on the diagonal.
A literal zero.
Yeah, a zero. Why does that specific lack of two-way trade guarantee that the zone will be defended later?
Because a zero on the opposing side of an imbalance through a major structural level isn't just a fast market. It is the visual proof of total liquidity exhaustion.
Meaning the sellers gave up.
Exactly. The passive sellers who were defending that POC didn't just get run over. They literally pulled their limit orders and stepped completely out of the way.
Wow.
When resting liquidity vanishes like that and aggressive buyers sweep the empty book, it establishes a newly accepted value area. The market structure instantly flips that old resistance into hard support simply because the sellers have factually abandoned the location.
So stacked imbalances and sweeps show us exactly what it looks like when one side is clearly winning the battle, consuming liquidity and driving price. But the market isn't always a clean sweep. Often there is a fatal flaw in following aggressive volume blindly. I mean, every developing trader has that horror story of buying the absolute top of a breakout candle because they saw, you know, green tape flying.
Oh, yeah. We've all been there.
They think they're joining momentum, but they immediately watch the market reverse and stop them out. They were cheering for the aggressive buyers, completely failing to realize those buyers were running headfirst into a wood chipper of resting limit orders.
And that wood chipper is the institutional iceberg order. Which brings us to the exact opposite of an imbalance absorption.
Absorption?
Yes. If an imbalance is a sweep, absorption is a brick wall. Mechanically, absorption occurs when a disproportionately large amount of aggressive volume hits the extreme of a candle, like the absolute high or low, but completely fails to move the price any further.
I want to challenge this a bit because if I am trading the NQ during the opening hour, it is incredibly choppy. Like, price pushes up, prints heavy volume, pauses, and pulls back.
Standard open volatility.
Yeah, and it feels like I am looking at absorption on almost every single one-minute candle. If a trader just starts fading the high every time they see heavy volume, they are going to get chopped to pieces. So how do we mechanically separate true institutional absorption from just standard market friction?
That right there is the single most common pitfall in order flow trading. You cannot trade volume in a vacuum.
Right.
To filter out the noise of the opening hour chop, true absorption must meet three strict non-negotiable conditions simultaneously.
Okay, what are they?
If a setup misses even one of these conditions, you classify it as standard friction and ignore it completely. The first condition is pier size.
Meaning volume.
Yes. The executed volume at that extreme price level must be dramatically above the candle's per level average. We are looking for roughly 2 times the average volume or more.
Mm.
It cannot just be heavy. It must be an undeniable anomaly of execution.
Because if it isn't an anomaly, it isn't an institution defending a level. It's just retail traders shuffling contracts back and forth.
Exactly. Just noise.
Okay, so we have massive anomalous size at the high. What is the second condition?
Condition 2 is the cross ratio. The failing aggressor must diagonally dominate the other side.
Walk me through that visually.
Let's visualize the high of a bullish candle. To validate absorption, we need to see massive, aggressive market buying on the diagonal that utterly fails to break through the resting limit sell orders. The aggressive buyers are pouring in, smashing the ask, trying to force the breakout.
But the passive sellers are just absorbing all of that horsepower.
Yes. Think of it like someone revving a sports car engine in neutral. The RPMs are screaming. That is your massive aggressive volume. But the tires aren't engaging the pavement. Price isn't ticking up.
Because the passive sellers are reloading their limit orders as fast as the aggressive buyers can consume them. The buyers are exhausting their capital, and the passive sellers are proving their structural dominance.
Exactly. And that cements that exact tick as future resistance. Which brings us to the third and arguably most important condition. Rejection. Yes. The close of that specific candle must genuinely back away from the extreme. It must leave a definitive structural rejection wick.
Wait, really? The wick is mandatory.
Without that wick, the absorption is completely unconfirmed. Closing just one single tick below the high does not qualify.
Why is that so rigid?
Because without a real rejection wick, you have no proof that the passive seller is actually finished accumulating their position. They might just be pausing before pulling their liquidity and letting the price run. The market has to actively reverse away from the battleground to prove that the aggressive buyers have fully capitulated and are now trapped off sides.
So it's a three-part lock. Massive anomalous volume, diagonal dominance by the side that is failing to advance price, and a definitive structural rejection wick proving the capitulation.
That's it. If you don't have all three, you are just guessing.
And even if you do have all three, there is a rigid contextual rule here, right? You never trade an absorption footprint in isolation. You don't just blindly short the high of a random candle in the middle of a range.
Never. The micro must always align with the macro. True absorption only provides an edge when it is perfectly confluent with a broader, higher time frame structural level.
Like what?
You want to see that sports car revving in neutral exactly at a major VWAP band, or a heavy prior day volume node, or a critical daily value area high, like a VAH.
So the footprint does not give you the thesis.
Oh, no. It is simply the micro timing trigger that confirms the macro thesis is playing out exactly where you expected it to.
Okay, so we have covered sweeps where liquidity vanishes and brick walls where liquidity absorbs the attack. But there is a third anomaly that happens at the extremes of these candles. What happens when the engine just cuts out and the battle never actually resolves?
You are looking at an unfinished auction.
An unfinished auction.
Yes. This is a structural anomaly that occurs when trades print on both the bid and the ask at the absolute high or low of a candle.
To understand why that is an anomaly, we have to look at what normally happens, right? Like normally at the absolute extreme of a candle, you expect to see a zero on one side.
Exactly. If price reaches the absolute high and stops, you expect the last aggressive trade to hit the ask, find zero additional buyers willing to pay higher, and then the price ticks down.
So the bid side at that absolute high tick should be a hard zero.
Yes. That is a standard completed single print rejection. That zero proves that the auction successfully probed the edge of liquidity, found no participants, and reversed. The auction did its job.
But in an unfinished auction, the trades simply stop midway.
Right. You have volume transacting on the bid and volume transacting on the ask right at the extreme tip of the wick. The market just drifts away without finding that definitive zero.
Why does the market care about that? Like, why does an unfinished auction actually matter structurally?
Because the continuous dual auction process mandates price discovery. The market hates an unfinished auction because it means the true edge of liquidity was never actually discovered. The participation just temporarily paused. Because the auction is technically incomplete, that specific price level becomes a massive psychological and structural magnet. The market exhibits an extreme gravitational tendency to revisit that exact tick to finish the business and find that zero.
And the time frame dictates the gravity, right?
Absolutely. A 1 minute unfinished auction might get repaired in the next rotation, but a 60 minute or daily unfinished auction, that is a massive macro target.
If I am looking at how real practitioners use this, it is fundamentally a trade management tool. Like, it is an incredibly high probability target to confirm an existing trade idea.
Definitely. If you are long the ES from a major support level and you see a pristine unfinished auction sitting 12 points above you from the overnight session, that gives you immense confidence to hold for that structural target.
And I imagine it works in reverse too.
It does. It is a glaring red flag for your risk management. Imagine you initiate a short position, but there is a massive unresolved unfinished auction just 10 ticks below your entry.
You have to recognize that market gravity is actively pulling price toward that magnet, working directly against your directional thesis.
Exactly. You are fighting the auction's mandate to repair itself.
Now, there is a very strict software requirement that we have to clarify here, because otherwise, traders will see false magnets everywhere.
Oh, this is critical.
This pattern is only mathematically valid if your data engine is using an uptick and downtick classification for the volume.
Yes. If your platform is relying on a standard bid-ask display mode, where it just assumes every trade at the offer is a buy, the data gets heavily skewed in fast markets.
Right. You will constantly see volume on both sides of the extreme simply due to reporting latency.
You must ensure your software classifies the trades based on the actual tick direction relative to the prior trade, or you are trading ghosts.
But there is a much larger fatal flaw that completely invalidates all of these concepts if you are trading the wrong asset class.
Yeah, there is.
All of this extreme precision, like the diagonal map, the strict absorption filters, the hunt for unfinished auctions, is completely useless if your underlying data feed is fragmented.
Right. And this is exactly why you see institutional practitioners applying order flow footprints almost exclusively to the futures markets and basically ignoring equities.
If I take these exact same rules, these same footprint settings, and apply them to an Apple or a Tesla chart, I am going to get my face ripped off. Why does this precision suddenly break when we leave the futures ecosystem?
It all comes down to market structure and centralized clearing. Futures products like the NQ, the ES, and CL execute on a centralized exchange, the CME.
Right.
Every single order from every single participant in the world routes through one central clearinghouse. That guarantees a pristine 100% complete bid and ask tape.
So it's the absolute truth.
Yes. When you see a 500 lot absorption print on an ES footprint, you are seeing the absolute undisputed truth of every contract that transacted at that microsecond.
Now contrast that with the US equity markets. Between 40 and 45% of all equity volume does not execute on a lit exchange.
It's crazy. It executes entirely off exchange. It happens in dark pools, or it is internalized by massive broker-dealers who match retail flow internally before it ever sees the SEP data feed.
Because of that severe fragmentation, applying order flow to an individual stock means you are making hard directional bets on fundamentally incomplete data.
Exactly. You might see what looks like a massive buy imbalance on the lit exchange tape, completely unaware that a massive block of sell orders just cleared in a dark pool at that exact same microsecond, absorbing all of that momentum off book.
It's the invisible crowd analogy.
Right.
Trying to read a footprint chart on a fragmented equity ticker is like trying to track physical footprints on a sidewalk while half the people walking past you are completely invisible. You are trying to predict the direction of the crowd while being entirely blind to half of the participants.
It is a mathematically losing game. You must have pristine data. But even with that pristine CME futures data, developing traders constantly fall into another conceptual trap.
What's that?
They confuse the footprint chart with the order book or the liquidity heat map.
I mean, it's easy to see why they confuse them. They both visualize volume at price levels.
True, but they are answering fundamentally different questions about the timeline of the market.
How so?
Well, the footprint chart is a historical record. It tells you exactly what already happened. It is the undeniable truth of executed irreversible aggression.
Mm.
Once a market order crosses the spread and prints on the footprint, it cannot be undone.
The capital has changed hands. The trade is a fact.
Exactly. Now, the order book, or a heat map, shows you what is currently being offered. It represents resting liquidity. It is the intended future of the market.
But intent in financial markets is incredibly cheap.
Very cheap. Resting liquidity can be pulled, spoofed, or manipulated in a fraction of a millisecond.
You might look at a heat map and see a massive, glowing block of limit sell orders sitting 10 ticks above the current price. It looks like an impenetrable brick wall.
It does. But the algorithmic players placing those orders have zero obligation to actually leave them there.
Right. The moment price ticks up and gets within striking distance, those limit orders could vanish instantly. It was just a spoof to drag retail buying pressure upward.
And that is exactly where the two tools synthesize. The footprint proves whether that heat map wall was real or a complete illusion.
So when price finally hits that massive resting liquidity, you watch the footprint.
Yes. Does it show massive anomalous volume, diagonal dominance, and a rejection wick? If so, the absorption is real, the wall held, and the trap is set.
Or does the footprint show a stacked imbalance slicing straight through empty space with zero opposite side participation?
If that happens, the heat map lied to you, the liquidity was pulled, and the algorithmic sweep is in full effect. The heat map asks, what are they threatening to do?
Mm-hmm.
The footprint demands to know, what did they actually just pay for?
When you step back and connect all of these mechanics, the reality of the footprint becomes very clear. It is strictly a micro-timing tool for day trading and scalping.
Strictly. It is not designed to generate macro swing trade ideas out of thin air.
It is a highly specialized instrument designed for detecting traps, identifying hidden support through stacked imbalances, and locating the magnetic pull of unfinished auctions.
Exactly. You use your macro tools, your volume profiles, your daily value areas to build the broad structural thesis. You use the footprint to execute with surgical precision the moment price enters the kill zone.
The obvious friction point here, though, is the cognitive load. Doing diagonal cross math in your head while calculating relative volume averages on a volatile 1 minute NQ candle, it's a fantastic way to give yourself a migraine and miss the actual trade.
Oh, it's impossible to do manually for very long. The entire goal of modern trading infrastructure is to let the software do the heavy lifting.
Which is why tools that automate this exact logic are so critical for practitioners. For example, the Motive Wave Footprint Study, specifically the volume imprint, actually hard codes these specific mechanics for you.
Right.
It automatically gates the imbalances behind the absolute volume thresholds. It runs the strict three-condition absorption math in real time. It identifies the true unfinished auctions, and it wraps it all into a per-candle totals table so you aren't doing live arithmetic. For those wanting to see exactly how those filters operate under the hood, you can look up the documentation over at wickflow.com.
It removes the exhaustion of visual processing, allowing you to focus entirely on context and market structure. You aren't calculating the anomaly. You're simply reacting to its presence at your predefined levels.
Which leaves us with a critical dynamic to consider about how we view the timeline of the market. If the footprint reveals the undeniable executed truth of the past, and the heat map displays the psychological, often manipulated probabilities of the future, you have to ask yourself, how much edge is being left on the table by traders who spend their entire careers obsessing over only one side of that timeline?